Our next speaker this morning will be Al Kenyon. Al Kenyon's 50 years of experience in broadcasting started as an announcer and eventually chief engineer at a 10-watt high school FM radio station. He holds a bachelor's in physics from the State University of New York. Al worked for Clear Channel as a senior vice president in projects and technology. During this time, he served as a member of the board of directors of Ibiquity Digital, the developer of the US HD radio system. He became a government contractor in 2006, serving FEMA as a subject matter expert on alert and warning systems, and became a federal employee joining FEMA's Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, IPAWS, Program Management Office in 2010. He's currently the technical lead for the IPAWS national test effort. Al Kenyon.
Thank you, and before we get going, one of the things I learned from the presentation the other day was I need another wireless device up here, so I brought my own mouse. I've got an announcement to make. It's not in the slides. It's something we've worked out fairly recently. In talking to our friends at Public Safety Homeland Security Bureau, which is comprised almost entirely of attorneys, folks who are trained to spend all day working with words, regardless of what actually comes out of them. I said we need to have some sort of an implementation plan for the sixth report and order changes that are dictated for EAS. We've got this important system. Everybody's concerned about getting the presidential message out. But if people go out and change their devices so that they recognize the all zeros code before we start sending it, it's a problem. Well, it didn't quite work through because there was a session that was publicized about an EAS workshop where they talked more about access and functional needs than EAS. So here we make an announcement. As of January 1, FEMA will, when FEMA originates any national level message, we will use both the all zeros code and the temporary workaround, which was arranged for certain device manufacturers of sending the geocode for Washington, D.C. Both geocodes will be sent with any EAN message. Hopefully, we'll continue our record of never sending one. But so anytime after January 1, when the device manufacturers send out their updates, you're free to go ahead and just do a one-stop reconfiguration, move it forward to processing an EAN immediately, and acknowledging or requiring either the your local geocode or the geocode for the all US. Funny thing is, one of the attorneys I talked to said, oh, we kind of expected them to do a flash cut. It's like, okay, you're gonna take 5,000 or 6,000 engineers and have them update 20,000 or 30,000 devices at midnight for what? So that's the government at work. One of the neat things I do is I consider myself an engineer who's worked his way into government, and I can talk to these people on a government-to-government basis. So I can say things that I can talk to them like I can talk to you guys. If somebody's being stupid, I can tell them they're being stupid. And it works out a little bit better. This presentation is going to be a whole lot less serious and technical. I don't think I have a single formula in it. And to just give you an idea, the main question is, what is IPAWS? This is about how serious the presentation is going to be. It's a national system for local alerting. What we wanted to do is put together an alert clearinghouse for local, state, federal agencies where they can send an alert in CAP format, and it can be retrieved from one location. It's kind of if we build it, they will come sort of a thing. It can be used for all kinds of events. Pretty much everybody in here is familiar with EAS, probably more so than you want to be. I think that several people in here could probably deliver this presentation. We've had very good adoption by states. Everybody but the state of Montana has adopted it statewide. Minnesota is particularly active, along with several other states you can see there. These are adoption by local agencies. If you look at it, there's still a lot of white space out there, but you can consider the places that are covered. More than 50% of the U.S. population is served by emergency management agencies that are authorized to send alerts locally through IPAWS. I seem to be going two slides at a time here. Yeah, I'm afraid so. I've got enough slides, I've got to go through them about 30 seconds a slide, but you know, doing them two at once.
Yellow is reverse and red is forward.
Yeah, there's the state slide that just went by. And forward, as it said. Thanks for the tip, Jeff, it does say forward. For the local jurisdictions, they get limited alerting authority they have to run through the state to be authorized because FEMA doesn't pretend to know who the alerting officials are in Tuscarora County or whatever. So when they get an application, they send it to us. We send it back out to the state to authorize it, and the state signs off on it. This is an example of what's at the bottom of one of the forms for the different levels of alerting that are authorized for a particular jurisdiction. So not everybody can send every type of an alert. And the alerts that a local jurisdiction sends are restricted to those areas that they actually serve. So the feedback control loop there for over alerting is if you get too many alerts in a particular jurisdiction, there's probably an elected official somewhere that you can influence to remedy that problem. IPAWS consists of just those two red hockey puck things in the middle. We've got the alerting authorities on the way over on the left, and we've got some servers that do their magic and push it out to you fine folks, the folks that Jeff was talking about through wireless emergency alerts, and some internet service providers. IPAWS takes the alerts from the alerting authorities. They use a CAP authoring tool, which they have to purchase directly from some sort of a vendor because there was an existing business, so the federal government couldn't just whip up a CAP authoring tool in competition with private industry. They put together an alert. It's signed with a digital certificate, and the digital certificate matches that form we showed earlier where we check it to make sure they're still sending to the proper jurisdiction, and it's a type of alert that they're authorized to send. And it goes through and checks to make sure all the XML is all filled out, kind of like when you go online and you fill out a charge thing for online and you forget to enter something or other, it comes back and says, hey, you need to fill this in. So it verifies the permissions and all that. Got to remember to use the right buttons. The capabilities, as everybody's aware, all licensees are required to monitor the IPAWS feed. It's used to trigger radio, TV, and cable alerts. IPAWS can deliver the full text of an emergency message. So for video providers, that's particularly important because there's been a problem if something just came from National Weather Service or a local jurisdiction. You had to have somebody go out to the Chiron and hammer something out so that you'd have the matching text available. It's delivered to your doorstep through IPAWS. It supports audio attachments, so you get good, clean, first copy audio each time, and it's available for text-to-speech. In Ohio, they tried to do some required monthly testing, and they had an audio file all set up. They sent it out for the URL with the audio file, and for some reason, all the boxes out there did text-to-speech. Got a call from Greg Savaldi, he said, Al, what happened? I looked it up. Went into the XML for the message, went down to the URL, looked at the URL, said, 192.168, I know what happened to your... Yeah, it helps if you put the audio on a server that can be seen from outside. Even I know that. And I'm IP impaired, so... The average usage for IPAWS, we get someplace between 8,000 and 10,000 alerts processed through IPAWS a week. Most of them are from National Weather Service. This is a particularly active week this last summer, where you can see the totals up there. and the various types. Not everything is from the National Weather Service. We have even such things as dust storm warnings, fire warnings, civil emergency. We have an unfortunate number of child abduction emergencies alerts that come through, but one of the good things is the child abduction alerts through wireless emergency alerts have led to a lot of recoveries. Here's where they landed around the country that particular week, and you can see all the different types of them there. Pick out your favorite state. And again, most of them are from the National Weather Service. It's kind of strange that when they send out flash flood alerts, they send them out going down the river, going down the river, going down the river, and we end up with what many folks have termed message flooding. Wireless emergency alerts. A lot of folks in broadcasting look at wireless emergency alerts as encroaching on the broadcaster's option to deliver emergency information. Don't worry about it so much. It's limited to 90 characters, and most of them end up with the message says, check local media. Who's the local media? It's us folks. So it's a good idea if you know what's going on, so when folks' phones go off and they tune in the radio or TV to find out what's going on, something other than the automation can tell them what's going on. Not all the handsets work. Devices work in different ways. And the FCC was so kind as not to provide us with a means of openly testing wireless emergency alerts. Yeah, okay, we've got to do required weeklies, we've got to do required monthlies, FEMA's come up with national periodic test, all of which interrupts your programming. Not so for the phone companies. There's one required weekly test that goes out on the third Wednesday through cell systems. But you really have to play with your phone and have a special phone in order to be able to pick it up. Our friendly folks at NOAA, they're not quite up to speed with accepting alerts from IPAWS. They're in the process of replacing their CRS, which was the console replacement system, which replaced the old cart machine programming for weather stations. They're finally putting a new system out called the Broadcast Message Handler. They're in test in several states, and once that's in place, then they'll work on figuring out how to incorporate messages from IPAWS. We have a lab facility. It's part of Defense Information Systems Agency Joint Interoperability Test Command. Yeah, I worked there for a couple years. I had to figure out how to say that. It's a facility in Indian Head, Maryland. It's about 20 miles outside of D.C. We have EAS devices from pretty much every EAS device known to man. A couple people in the room have been out there. I think Jim's been there a couple times with looking it over. And you see the young lady in the ponytail there in the center? The guy in the blue shirt, that's my son. He happens to work there. And I have absolutely no supervisory capability over that because of that. But we work with them. They do testing for different situations, for different combinations of systems. They also work with states, counties, and municipalities to do testing. We've got a complete instance of IPAWS there that's kind of in a sandbox environment where they can send tests to it and do everything, including fire off cell phones sitting inside a little Faraday cage, so that they can find out how their alerting system works and practice it. We have primary entry point stations around the country. The one not too far from here has an installation very similar to this with a large fuel tank, a EMP-protected generator, and a transmitter enclosure with, in this case, I was happy to see that Nautel won the bid process. And we have Nautel transmitters essentially in a can. Normally the doors are closed on that, and you can see the finger stock there. So in case of something really nasty occurring, solar flare or whatever else, they can go out there, pop the doors off, and it's kind of a kit you can make a radio station out of, regardless of what has recently occurred. PEP stations, we've got about 77 around the country, including different distributions by NPR, Premier Radio, and I'm missing one, Gary, what is it? I don't know. This happens. I'll be celebrating my 65th birthday in a little while. I can skip a few things here and there. The first national EAS test was famously held on November 9th of 2011. We successfully demonstrated we could interrupt programming across the country. Yeah, well, some of us could have seen some of that coming, but anyway. The next set of testing is going to be originated through IPAWS, and then we'll get back to a totally integrated test someplace down the road where it goes through IPAWS and the PEP stations as well. We did our first testing with the state of West Virginia. West Virginia was a very aggressive early adopter of IPAWS because of the communications difficulties caused by all the wrinkles in the terrain there. It's one of those states where if you took and ironed it out, it'd be a whole lot bigger, but it goes up and down a lot. So we worked with Michelle Christ in the West Virginia Association of Broadcasters. She encouraged their members to participate and was very, very helpful. We ended up with overall participation of 55%. We learned that we needed to reach out to non-com broadcasters that really didn't attend the Broadcast Association things that much, because among the membership of the West Virginia Broadcast Association, we had 85% participation, which was remarkable. We sent the test out, and of the people who were participating in the test, we had a 90% success rate. Really can't see much on the map here, but this is what happens when you actually use the official graphics department to produce a map for you. It looks like this, and you go, you know, I could do a whole lot better at home, but you'll see a couple of red dots up there around Wheeling. That was some of the significant failures up there were, it was a cluster operation where they dutifully went out and changed their EIS device that was monitoring IPAWS to process the NPT message and send it on through. Kind of forgot that it was a cluster operation, and that EIS device fed another one which fit for each individual station. So the one that was listening to IPAWS, that one went off. The other ones went, I don't know what it is. And programming continued on with five of the six stations in the cluster. It was one of the lessons learned. Other places, they learned that you really do have to work your way all the way through the menu and click save. Who would have thought? But I thought it was very impressive that we sent a message out with no chance to pretest it, just people following instructions and setting things up, and 90% success rate. So it indicates that the system actually can work pretty well. Next, we did a test in the what we termed the North Central states. We wanted to include Indiana in this one originally, but as it turned out, they had received a waiver to do a tornado test the same week we were going to be doing this, and just didn't want to blow holes in people's programming twice in one week for EAS-related stuff. So they opted out, and we'll pick them up on a later round. About 1,300 radio and TV stations, a couple hundred cable systems. And one of the things we came up with was, we did the same thing. We sent the test message out. We started at 2:00, but then we moved to 2:30. Now we're doing our testing at 20 minutes after the hour because it works a little bit better with most radio and TV station commercial clocks. In order to get some initial results, we send monitor teams out from the IPAWS lab. They're each sent out with one of these boxes, which has either 10 or 16 tuners and digital recorders to go along with that for AM and FM, and can tune in up to 8 DTV operations, and those also go into a digital recorder. That gives us some initial results, and also gives some real nifty capture files that I'll get to here to a little bit later. The North Central region, our monitoring team recorded 128 randomly selected radio and TV stations, And from that sample, we showed we had a 70% success rate. And that's just, you know, we didn't know who was participating, who wasn't. So we're just doing a statistical random sample, and worked out. Then you go back to results that are gathered by the broadcast associations. For example, Michigan Association of Broadcasters asked their members to fill out a brief online survey. And we're taking the results of that online survey, which they published, and so that FEMA could get a copy of it. It showed that of the 254 stations, we ended up with a success rate of over 88%, which stays around that 90% figure. Again, not bad for something that people have set up and just kind of hope it works. The message itself, CAP message is an XML format message. Most folks here are familiar with that one way or another. Yeah, I don't expect you to read that. It's just, we included the MP3 file in the message. It just gives you an idea, because on that screen, the MP3 message starts over there and it ends over there someplace. The guts of it for where it goes to, again, this is from the North Central test, so we got the geocodes for Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee in there. And the full text of the message is shown down here at the bottom. That's what gets picked up by your EAS device, particularly at a video service, television or cable, that gets picked up and can automatically be entered into a scroll without manual intervention. It just goes, and you're compliant. On the earlier chart, it showed we had some internet connectivity for internet. Used to be called the public feed. Now it's called the All Hazards and Emergency Information feed. It's not exactly public. It requires a PIN to access it, and an agreement for needs to be signed before you can get a PIN to access it. But our redistribution partners get the message, and this is just a sample of what they get and what can be displayed. It's the same way that the messages get into Facebook and Google and whatever other services people may be using. Next, we went to New England. We did six states up there. About half the number of stations we addressed in the North Central test. The different colors are AM, FM, and TV stations. We went to our currently adopted time of 20 minutes after the hour as the full text of the message, if you didn't see it in the slide before. The idea is for the public, it's going to sound very much like what they hear once a month. This has to be a non-event. So we don't want people to get excited over it. We're just testing. We're just trying to figure out how the stuff works. It's not to get them all excited. And again, this is all a build-up to doing a full national test of IPAWS, where we don't have to jump up and down and put up slides and do all this other stuff. We can just test it. And then eventually we can test it on a regular basis without any heavy lifting. The New England regional test, the preliminary results came back with about a 70% success rate. I got the quick look report from the folks at JITIC last night about 5 o'clock. So you remember that test went off in September, and this is a quick look report. I did say that was our test lab is run through Defense Information System Agency. It's a military thing. They've got to generate it. They've got to send it down to Fort Huachuca. Four people have to sign it off up there. It has to come out, be re-signed, and it takes a while to make it around the horn. Observations. This is the fun part. The message source. But a lot of the stations in West Virginia, the TV stations, they participated in the test, but they got the test message from off the air from an LP station. So talking to Greg Savaldi in Ohio, I said, hey, I've got an idea. There's only 12 guys, and I know them all here very well. Why don't I ask them, know what kind of equipment they have, why don't I ask them to delay the test message by a minute and see what happens? This is a no-fault test. There are no rules. So I said, hey, go ahead. So what happened in West Virginia was this. You got the time differential between when some people's devices polled iPods, typically they poll iPods about every 30 seconds to get the message. If your LP station polls just right after the message is posted, it's liable to process it and get it on the air before another station that polled just before the message was posted rechecks with iPods. They're liable to get it off the air before they check back with iPods. You can see the staggered timing there. One of the things we found recently is some of the devices, most of the devices that are used by radio will wait until they get two data headers that match and will start processing and will resend the message. We found out that some of the newer entrants to the market, they'll take the message with they hear coming in and they'll wait the entire 2 minutes until they get an end of message and then they'll send the message. So there's a significant delay, and the FCC is now aware of that, and they're going, well, when we told folks that for the NPT needed to be forwarded immediately, we meant immediately. Okay, they're attorneys. They'll figure it out sooner or later. The one-minute hold effect in Ohio, in that same test, I looked at the stats for 29 observed stations outside of Ohio, and we had a 55% of those stations had the full message scroll. They had that text box from the message that had the full text of the message. The other 45% just had the header generated scroll, which says a message from originator sent to this area at this time and will expire at this time. This just the basic information. That's all they had. In Ohio, with the LPs delaying the message by 1 minute, 10 out of 10 retrieved the message from iPause and displayed the full text. I've talked to Dr. Gary and some others about that's something that might be considered for state plans for certain levels or for a certain type of events. It might be beneficial to incorporate into state plans to delay messages through LP stations to allow the video operations an opportunity to capture the message from iPause. Alternatively, if TV and cable operators go back to their device providers and talk to them about possible solutions for this, there might be an option for the Monroes, Trilithics, whatever of the world to when they receive a message off air, to continue checking iPause to see if they get a duplicate first generation copy rather than relaying one that came in from an AM or FM station. I don't know what the coding difficulties are. These folks sold these devices and they made money the first time, and as far as I know, no one's charging a maintenance fee. So I'm not too sure how that business model works when you ask them to do improvements, but it's an option. Friendly folks, at the time it was Clear Channel, it's now iHeartMedia, have a system in their emergency operations center called EIS Watch, where most, if not all, of the EIS devices around the country send their alerting information for alerts they've received and how they're processed, send them to the Emergency Operations System Center in Cincinnati. I was there watching the screens flip by for the North Central test and grabbed a quick and horribly distorted screen capture here. So you can see how quickly it went through. We issued it at 14:30 straight up. And the indications are that a bunch of the stations had already received it and passed it on. Reviewing the tabular data that was made available to us from the AS Watch system, we found that for most of the stations, received the message between 2 and 3 times. They got it from iPause, they got it from an LP, they got it from a state primary. So it indicates that the system, when you send out a message through iPause, it's pretty robust. It's not just the internet connectivity. Gee, I'll call home later. But it indicates how robust the system is. And most of that connectivity was, I mean, obviously the display came back through IP, but most of that connectivity was off-air relay, which is why people talk about how robust EAS is. That's the first time I've seen definitive proof of how robust that can be. Because everybody does their darndest to make sure their facilities are operational full-time under all conditions, and regardless of what happens, the last mile connectivity for internet broadcast tends to stay operational. Okay, some of the fun stuff. Here's how clean a message can sound.
0.3 WCSG. Around the region, it's 41 in Holland, 46 in Kalamazoo, 40
in Benton Harbor, St. Joe,
and 40.
This is a national test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test. Broadcast and cable operators in your area have developed this system and
Okay, you get the idea. It hasn't gone through somebody else's processing chain. It hasn't been compressed and clipped, transmitted, recovered. So that's an off-air capture. Now, if you don't if you're not really careful about how you set the levels with certain EAS devices, you can get this sort of a sound. Term audio punch through. It's what happens when the DSP in some EAS devices. Back when we started this out in the 90s, most of the devices had contacts. They switched in, they switched out. Not a whole lot of crosstalk on a relay. Now they've moved up to DSP processing. In some cases, the audio switching it's not really switched. It just the DSP goes to maximum attenuation. And if you overdrive it, that's what happens. So particularly with certain vendors, you get that effect. And this one came out of out of New England. First time I'd ever heard it. It's like, we got a 90% success rate. I find it disappointing because it's the cool stuff happens when it doesn't work properly. And this was really pretty cool. Okay, now I got it. Found it here. I maintain station audio so you can tell that that's normal audio. Sounds okay so far, but the audio playback's coming in a moment.
This is a national test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test.
The words came from a station manager who was forwarding that information around. So I stole his header from the email saying, yeah, mildly terrifying. Now, you would think that would be someplace where they're running an AES-3 or some sort of a digital audio chain and they mismatched the clocks. No, that was a Sage digital NDEC running analog in, analog out. Somebody went to the page where it said clock frequency and said, oh, I'll play with this, but it doesn't make any difference. Everybody would be well advised to read the manual. Jim, you appreciate it when people read the manual, don't you? Yeah. Can we have a microphone back there for just a moment?
Messages. The first one you played, you didn't have any attention tone.
Yeah, I edited that out because we've all heard it a bunch of times, but yes.
But over-the-air tests still are sent without an attention tone, and Part 11 says that if there's a spoken message, you're supposed to have an attention tone. And our equipment, when they see the attention tone, they turn the voice chip on, the recording chip, at the end of the attention tone. So if the guy doesn't send the attention tone, we don't record the message.
Yeah. I actually did edit some of these things for consumption, but not so much. So, okay, now it's time to start picking on the video side of the house.
Marcia, what happened?
Peter hit me in the nose with a football.
No.
I did this one early on when I was being really nice to people, so I took the call letters out.
This concludes this national test of the emergency alert system.
By the way, I didn't cut that one short either. That's why I took the call letters out. So not only was it horribly overdriven.
Don't eat pasteurized processed cheese food.
I can't just talk right through that. Let's see if we can do that.
Marcia, what happened?
No, I don't want that one again.
Peter hit me in the nose with a football.
No.
Can you make it stop? It's gone. I think we lost the cheese one. Sorry for the folks up here. But anyway, for TV, we've noticed there seems to be a consensus developing, although there are not necessarily any standards. The consensus seems to be that tests have a green scroll behind them, watches have a yellow, and warnings have a red background. That seems to be developing. There are quite a few different combinations that we noted in the test. You can see them up there. There's some unfortunate things where some things just don't work out too well. Here, the audio message is not the important part, but if you watch what happens with the scroll, these guys were being proactive. They put a slide up in anticipation of the test message. Somebody forgot that their selected font was white on clear. And another problem that I found was interesting, this showed up in West Virginia and several other locations. Apparently, some folks' chains have a buffer problem. The buffer stores a previous message as far as the scroll is concerned, and you end up with something like this. Note carefully what comes across the top of the screen. This is being triggered off a National Periodic Test message. Where the heck did that come from? It was in a buffer somewhere.
This is a national.
But if you don't know about it, if somebody doesn't tell you, radio stations have some of them have significant challenges because you're dealing with multiple digital subs and things like that. TV stations, where you're dealing with multiple digitals, you've got, in a control room, you've got video monitors, you can see what goes on different channels. You can't necessarily hear what's going on different channels. So you can end up with other varying challenges. Here's another one where I just stopped it. Again, it was a required weekly test message, was in the buffer before it got onto the regular message. And there's some other interesting combinations.
Threatening to kill him, and it says that.
You know, that's not the data header. That's the attention signal. Okay, now here's the data header. Let's try it again. And finally, in Michigan, we had a bit of a mystery. This rolled across. This is one station, two different things that were reported. And again, here you see they got this from IPAWS. It has the full text of the announcement. They go through it.
Cable operators in your area.
Hopefully I cut this somewhere.
Voluntary cooperation with FEMA, the FCC, and local authorities to keep you informed in the event of an emergency. If this had been an actual emergency.
Straightforward guarantee, sir. I'm going to read it to you.
Moments later, same station. This comes on. The guys at the TV station are like, damn, I put that slide back up. What's going on here? They put it back up. Oh, there's a call letter in there. And no message. Boy, FEMA really screwed up bad. Well, the message, like I said, we've got these capture systems. We happen to capture that off the air. There's a product that's available mainly for use by hams called CTTY. If you select weather service in the setup and you play an EAS header into it, you can find out what's in there. And if you look at it, you see the first message says the source was PEP. And it goes through and says, and it's the duration further over is 30 minutes. That's what we sent out. Then the mystery message, the source is CIV. And Alex, okay, what's the difference? What are the differences you see? Exactly. That wasn't us. Turns out the board op at the station had, okay, there's a memo. Yeah, we're supposed to be running this thing. Came up, panicked, hit the box, dumped it. Oh, expletive. Oh, let me fix it. And he generated another one. That wasn't all that much help, thank you very much. So we started out testing in West Virginia. Then we went through the north central states. And finally, we're going to end up with another test right here. We're going to be working with Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, Minnesota, Wisconsin. Six states, I probably left one of them out, but anyway. That test will be conducted on the 17th of November. Most of you have probably heard about it from your State Broadcast Association folks, and we'll have a couple of webinars. The first webinar is going to be held on the 21st of October. Engineers, don't write that down. That one's for managers, operations personnel, and emergency management folks. You've seen what I did here. It's going to be all pretty much the same thing. We're trying to establish some sort of a dialogue between emergency managers. If you want to participate, you're more than welcome. There'll be a couple of tech webinars coming up later on. The idea is to try and get some dialogue between some of the broadcast management, some of the folks like the SECC chairs and Broadcast Association folks and the state emergency management people. And then we do a couple of webinars where we go over some of the basics of technically how it works, and end up with presentations on how to configure devices to enter them so that they will acknowledge and pass the NPT code. And that's pretty much it. In this cluster of states, there are about 1,800 radio, TV, and cable operations. So it should be an interesting go. And now we come up to questions.
We're a little short of time, so we'll have time for maybe one or two questions. Here we go.
And I'll be around, so you can just buttonhole me later on.
Hi, Al. Thanks for the presentation. I just had a quick question for you. You mentioned something about LP, FM, and LP TV stations, the codes being received from those first. Now, to my knowledge, at least in our operational area, nobody's monitoring an LP. So I'm
That's
kind of
puzzled because we're talking different LP. You're talking low power, and I'm talking local primary.
I'm talking about
EAS designation.
So the local primaries were going first as opposed to the SRs then.
Sorry, I'm from the government. I'm here to confuse you with abbreviations.
I should have caught that. And I was also curious on the national level test. I remember hearing something about we're going to have to report back our results on a website.
Yes, the FCC tells me that that website is coming along very well, and their data collection has been approved by Office of Management and Budget, which is a requirement for the Paperwork Reduction Act, which is why FEMA can't ask you directly how it went. The only information we get back is when you tell the broadcast associations how it went, and then they can tell us, but we can't ask you directly. So if you have problems, if you have success, let the broadcast associations know. Like Michelle and the folks here, or Gary, there's going to be an information collection method for everybody in Wisconsin to report back how it went. Similarly, there will be efforts in the other states. And I will be around. Just ask me most any question, and I'll do my best to give you a proper answer. And if I talk to you one-on-one, I can give you even a more direct answer than I can in a public forum. If you want to learn more about IPAWS, everybody that sends an IPAWS message has to take the IS-247A course. You'll find it completely underwhelming like I did, but it's there, it's free, it's available. Thank you.